Side 6. The Stars, My Destination. Continuing on page 211. He was trying to escape. Like a trapped firefly or some seabird caught in the blazing brazier of a naked beacon fire, he was beating about in a frenzy, a blackened, burning creature dashing himself against the unknown. Sound came as sight to him, as light in strange patterns. He saw the sound of his shouted name in vivid rhythms. Foil, 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 foil. Motion came as sound to him. He heard the writhing of the flames. He heard the swirls of smoke. He heard the flickering, jeering shadows, all speaking deafeningly in strange tongues.
Brugiar,
the steam asked.
Asha, asha, ritkit, ditzit, imkid,
the quick shadows answered.
Oh, ah, hee-tee,
the heat ripples clamored. Even the flames, smoldering on his own clothes, roared gibberish in his ears.
Montergeist man,
they bellowed. Color was pain to him. Heat, cold, pressure, sensations of intolerable heights and plunging depths, of tremendous accelerations and crushing compressions.
Red receded from him.
Green light attacked. Indigo undulated with sickening speed like a shuddering snake. Touch was taste to him. The feel of wood was acrid and chalky in his mouth. Metal was salt. Stone tasted sour sweet to the touch of his fingers, and the feel of glass cloyed his palate like over-rich pastry. Smell was touch. Hot stone smelled like velvet caressing his cheek. Smoke and ash were harsh tweeds rasping his skin, almost the feel of wet canvas. Molten metal smelled like blow hammering his heart, and the ionization of the pyre explosion filled the air with ozone that smelled like water trickling through his fingers. He was not blind, not deaf, not senseless. Sensation came to him, but filtered through a nervous system twisted and short-circuited by the shock of the pyre concussion. He was suffering from synesthesia, that rare condition in which perception receives messages from the objective world and relays these messages to the brain, but there in the brain the sensory perceptions are confused with one another. So in Foyle, sound registered as sight, motion registered as sound, colors became pain sensations. Touch became taste, and smell became touch. He was not only trapped within the labyrinth of the inferno under Old St. Pat's, he was trapped in the kaleidoscope of his own cross-senses. Again desperate, on the ghastly verge of extinction, he abandoned all disciplines and habits of living, or perhaps they were stripped from him. He reverted from a conditioned product of environment and experience to an inchoate creature craving escape and survival and exercising every power it possessed. And again, the miracle of 2 years ago took place. The undivided energy of an entire human organism, of every cell, fiber, nerve, and muscle, empowered that craving. And again, Foyle space jaunted. He went hurtling along the geodesical space lines of the curving universe at the speed of thought, far exceeding that of light. His spatial velocity was so frightful that his time axis was twisted from the vertical line drawn from the past, through now, to the future. He went flickering along the new near-horizontal axis, this new space-time geodesic, driven by the miracle of a human mind no longer inhibited by concepts of the impossible. Again, he achieved what Helmut Grant and Enzio Dandridge and scores of other experimenters had failed to do, because his blind panic forced him to abandon the spatio-temporal inhibitions that had defeated previous attempts. He did not jaunt to elsewhere, but to elsewhen. But most important, the fourth-dimensional awareness, the complete picture of the arrow of time and his position on it, which is born in every man but deeply submerged by the trivia of living, was in Foyle close to the surface. He jaunted along the space-time geodesics to elsewheres and elsewhens, translating I, the square root of minus one, from an imaginary number into reality, by a magnificent act of imagination. He jaunted. He jaunted back through time to his past. He became the burning man who had inspired himself with terror and perplexity on the beach in Australia, in a quack's office in Shanghai, on the Spanish stairs in Rome, on the moon, in the Scopsy colony on Mars. He jaunted back through time, revisiting the savage battles that he himself had fought in Gully Foyle's tiger hunt for vengeance. His flaming appearances were sometimes noted, other times not. He jaunted. He was a bored nomad, drifting in the empty frost of space. He stood in the door to nowhere. The cold was the taste of lemons, and the vacuum was a rake of talons on his skin. The sun and the stars were a shaking ague that racked his bones.
"Glomois Fredness!"
Motion roared in his ears. It was a figure with its back to him, vanishing down the corridor. A figure with a copper cauldron of provisions over its shoulder. A figure darting, floating, squirming through free fall. It was Gully Foyle.
"Me hat, Jezrot!"
The sight of his motion bellowed.
"Ah, ho, ho, git not to kak," the flicker of light and shade answered.
"Oh, so,"
the whirling raffle of debris in his wake murmured. The lemon taste in his mouth became unbearable. The rake of talons on his skin was torture. He jaunted. He reappeared in the furnace beneath Old St. Pat's less than a second after he had disappeared from there. He was drawn as the seabird is drawn, again and again, to the flames from which it is struggling to escape. He endured the roaring torture for only another moment. He jaunted. He was in the depths of Jouffre Martel. A velvet black darkness was bliss, paradise, euphoria.
"Ah,"
he cried in relief.
"Ah,"
came the echo of his voice, and the sound was translated into a blinding pattern of light.
"Ah, ha, 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 ha. Ha, 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 ha."
The burning man winced.
"Stop,"
he called, blinded by the noise. Again came the dazzling pattern of the echo.
"Stop, stop, stop, up, stop, 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 up, stop, 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 up, stop, 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 stop."
A distant clatter of steps came to his eyes in soft patterns. Clatter, 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 clatter. There came a shout like a zigzag of lightning. A beam of light attacked. It was the search party from the Jouffre Martel Hospital, tracking Foyle and Gisbella McQueen by geophone. The burning man disappeared, but not before he had unwittingly decoyed the searchers from the trail of the vanished fugitives. He was back under Old St. Pat's, reappearing only an instant after his last disappearance. His wild beatings into the unknown sent him stumbling up geodesic space-time lines that inevitably brought him back to the now he was trying to escape. For in the inverted saddle curve of space-time, his now was the deepest depression in the curve. He could drive himself up, up, up the geodesic lines into the past or future, but inevitably he must fall back into his own now, like a thrown ball hurled up the sloping walls of an infinite pit, to land, hang poised for a moment, and then roll back into the depths. But still he beat into the unknown in his desperation. Again he jaunted. He was on Jarvis Beach on the Australian coast. The motion of the surf was bawling,
"Logger Mist Crowdhaven."
The churning of the surf blinded him with the lights of batteries of footlights. Gully Foyle and Robin Winsbury stood before him. The body of a man lay on the sand, which felt like vinegar in the burning man's mouth. The wind, brushing his face, tasted like brown paper. Foyle opened his mouth and exclaimed. The sound came out in burning star bubbles. Foyle took a step.
"Crash!"
the motion blared. The burning man jaunted. He was in the office of Dr. Sergei Orel in Shanghai. Boyle was again before him, speaking in light patterns.
Who are you? Who are you? Who are you?
He flickered back to the agony of old St. Pat's and jaunted again. He was on the brawling Spanish stairs. 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 The burning man jaunted. It was cold again, with a taste of lemons, and vacuum raked his skin with unspeakable talons. He was peering through the porthole of a silvery yaw. The jagged mountains of the moon towered in the background. Through the porthole he could see the jangling racket of blood pumps and oxygen pumps and hear the uproar of the motion Gully Foyle made toward him. The clawing of the vacuum caught his throat in an agonizing grip. The geodesic lines of space-time rolled him back to now, under old St. Pat's, where less than 2 seconds had elapsed since he first began his frenzied struggle. Once more, like a burning spear, he hurled himself into the unknown. He was in the Skoptzi catacomb on Mars. The white slug that was Lindsay Joyce was writhing before him.
No, 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 her motion screamed. Don't hurt me. Don't kill me. No, please, please, please.
The burning man opened his tiger mouth and laughed.
She hurt, he said.
The sound of his voice burned his eyes.
She hurts, she hurts, she hurts, she hurts, she hurts, she hurts.
Who are you?
Foyle whispered.
Who are you?
The burning man winced.
Too bright, he said. Less light.
Foyle took a step forward.
Blagadamo!
The motion roared. The burning man clapped his hands over his ears in agony.
Too loud, he cried. Don't move so loud.
The writhing Skoptzi's motion was still screaming, beseeching,
Don't hurt me, don't hurt me.
The burning man laughed again. She was mute to normal men, but to his freak-crossed senses, her meaning was clear.
Listen to her, she's screaming, begging. She doesn't want to die. She doesn't want to be hurt. Listen to her.
It was Olivia Pristine gave the order. Olivia Pristine, not me. Don't hurt me. Olivia Pristine.
She's telling who gave the order. Can't you hear? Listen with your eyes. She says, Olivia.
What? What?
The checkerboard glitter of Foyle's question was too much for him. The burning man interpreted the Skoptzi's agony again.
She says, Olivia, Olivia Pristine, Olivia Pristine, Olivia Pristine.
He jaunted. He fell back into the pit under old St. Pat, and suddenly his confusion and despair told him he was dead. This was the finish of Gully Foyle. This was eternity, and hell was real. What he had seen was the past passing before his crumbling senses in the final moment of death. What he was enduring, he must endure through all time. He was dead. He knew he was dead. He refused to submit to eternity. He beat again into the unknown. The burning man jaunted. He was in a scintillating mist, a snowflake cluster of stars, a shower of liquid diamonds. There was the touch of butterfly wings on his skin. There was the taste of a strand of cool pearls in his mouth. His crossed kaleidoscopic senses could not tell him where he was, but he knew he wanted to remain in this nowhere forever.
Hello, Gully.
Who's that?
This is Robin.
Robin?
Robin Winsbury that was.
That was?
Robin Yeovil, that he is?
I don't understand. Am I dead?
No, Gully.
Where am I?
A long, long way from old St. Pat's.
But where?
I can't take the time to explain, Gully. You've only got a few moments here.
Why?
Because you haven't learned how to jaunt through space-time yet. You've got to go back and learn.
But I do know. I must know.
Sheffield said I space-jointed to Nomad 600,000 miles.
That was an accident then, Gully, and you'll do it again after you teach yourself. But you're not doing it now. You don't know how to hold on yet, how to turn any now into reality. You'll tumble back into old St. Pat's in a moment.
Robin, I've just remembered. I have bad news for you.
I know, Gully.
Your mother and sisters are dead.
I've known for a long time, Gully.
How long?
For 30 years.
That's impossible.
No, it isn't. This is a long, long way from old St. Pat's. I've been waiting to tell you how to save yourself from the fire, Gully. Will you listen?
I'm not dead?
No.
I'll listen.
Your senses are all confused. It'll pass soon, but I won't give the directions in left and right or up and down. I'll tell you what you can understand now.
Why are you helping me? After what I've done to you?
That's all forgiven and forgotten, Gully. Now listen to me. When you get back to old St. Pat's, turn around until you're facing the loudest shadows. Got that?
Yes.
Go toward the noise until you feel a deep prickling on your skin. Then stop.
Then stop.
Make a half turn into compression and a feeling of falling. Follow that.
Follow that.
You'll pass through a solid sheet of light and come to the taste of quinine. That's really a mass of wire. Push straight through the quinine until you see something that sounds like trip hammers. You'll be safe.
How do you know all this, Robin?
I've been briefed by an expert, Gully.
There was the sensation of laughter.
You'll be falling back into the past any moment now. Peter and Saul are here. They say au revoir and good luck. And Jiz Dagenham, too. Good luck, Gully dear.
The past? This is the future?
Yes, Gully.
Am I here? Is...
Olivia!
And then he was tumbling down, down, down the space-time lines back into the dreadful pit of now. Chapter 16. His senses uncrossed in the ivory and gold star chamber of Castle Pristine. Sight became sight, and he saw the high mirrors and stained glass windows, the gold-tooled library with android librarian on library ladder. Sound became sound, and he heard the android secretary tapping the manual bead recorder at the Louis Kahn's desk. Taste became taste as he sipped the cognac that the robot bartender handed him. He knew he was at bay, faced with a decision of his life. He ignored his enemies and examined their perpetual beam carved in the robot face of the bartender, a classic Irish grin.
Thank you, Foyle said.
My pleasure, sir, the robot replied and awaited its next cue.
Nice day,
Foyle remarked.
Always a lovely day somewhere, sir,
the robot beamed.
Awful day,
Foyle said.
Always a lovely day somewhere, sir,
the robot responded.
Day,
Foyle said.
Always a lovely day somewhere, sir,
the robot said. Foyle turned to the others.
That's me,
he said, motioning to the robot.
That's all of us.
We prattle about free will, but we're nothing but response. Mechanical reaction in prescribed grooves.
So, here I am.
Here I am, waiting to respond.
Press the buttons and I'll jump.
He aped the canned voice of the robot.
My pleasure to serve, sir.
Suddenly his tone lashed them.
What do you want?
They stirred with uneasy purpose. Foyle was burned, beaten, chastened. And yet he was taking control of all of them.
We'll stipulate the threats, Foyle said.
I'm to be hung, drawn, and quartered.
Tortured in hell if I don't.
What?
What do you want?
I want my property,
Pristine said, smiling coldly.
18 and some odd
pounds of pyre.
Yes. What do you offer?
I make no
offer, sir. I demand what is mine.
Yang Yovel and Dagenham began to speak. Foyle silenced them.
One button at a time, gentlemen.
Pristine is trying to make me jump at present. He turned to Pristine.
Press harder, blood and money.
We'll find another button.
Who are you to make demands at this moment?
Pristine tightened his lips.
The law, he began.
What?
Threats?
Foyle laughed.
Am I to be frightened into anything?
Don't be imbecile.
Speak to me the way you did New Year's Eve, Pristine. Without mercy, without forgiveness, without hypocrisy.
Pristine bowed, took a breath, and ceased to smile.
I offer you power,
he said. Adoption as my heir,
partnership in Pristine Enterprises,
the chieftainship of Clan and Sept.
Together,
we can own the world.
With Pyre?
Yes.
Your proposal is noted and declined.
Will you offer your daughter?
Olivia?
Pristine choked and clenched his fist.
Yes, Olivia. Where is she?
You scum,
Pristine cried.
Filth! Common thief!
You dare to...
Will you offer your daughter for the Pyre?
Yes, Pristine answered,
barely audible.
Foyle turned to Dagenham.
Press your button, Death said,
he said.
If the discussion is to be conducted on this level,
Dagenham snapped.
It is. Without mercy, without forgiveness, without hypocrisy.
What do you offer?
Glory.
Ah.
We can't offer money or power.
We can offer honor.
Gully Foyle, the man who saved the inner planets from annihilation. We can offer security.
We'll wipe out your criminal record, give you an honored name, guarantee a niche in the Hall of Fame.
No, Gisbella McQueen cut in sharply.
Don't accept. If you want to be a savior, destroy the secret. Don't give Pyre to anyone.
What is Pyre?
Quiet, Dagenham snapped.
It's a thermonuclear explosive that's detonated by thought alone, by psychokinesis,
Gisbella said.
What thought?
The desire of anyone to detonate it, directed at it. That brings it to critical mass, if it's not insulated by inert lead isotope.
I told you to be quiet,
Dagenham growled.
If we're all to have a chance at him, I want mine.
This is bigger than idealism.
Nothing's bigger than idealism.
Foyle's secretive, Yang Yovel murmured.
I know
how relatively unimportant
Pyre is just now,
he smiled at Foyle.
Sheffield's law assistant overheard part of your little discussion in Old St. Pat's. We know about the space jaunting.
There was a sudden hush.
Space jaunting, Dagenham exclaimed. Impossible. You don't mean it.
I do mean it. Foyle's demonstrated that space jaunting is not impossible. He jaunted 600,000 miles from an OS raider to the wreck of the Nomad.
As I said,
this is far bigger than Pyre.
I should like to discuss that
matter first.
Everyone's been telling what they want,
Robin Winsbury said slowly.
What do you want,
Gully Foyle?
Thank you,
Foyle answered.
I want to be punished.
What?
I want to be purged,
he said in a suffocated voice.
The stigmata began to appear on his bandaged face.
I want to pay for what I've done and settle the account. I want to get rid of this damnable cross I'm carrying.
This ache
that's cracking my spine. I want to go back to Zuppa Martel. I want a Lobo if I deserve it. And I know I do. I want...
You want escape?
Dagenham interrupted.
There's no escape.
I want release.
Out of the question,
Yang Yovel said.
There's too much of value locked up in your head to be lost by a lobotomy.
We're beyond easy, childish things like crime and punishment, Dagenham added.
No,
Robin objected.
There must always be sin and forgiveness. We're never beyond that.
Profit and loss, sin and forgiveness, idealism and realism, Foyle smiled. You're all so sure, so simple, so single-minded. I'm the only one in doubt. Let's see how sure you really are. You'll give us Olivia, Pristine.
To me, yes.
Will you give her up to the law?
She's a killer.
Pristine tried to rise,
and then fell back in his chair.
There must be forgiveness, Robin. Will you forgive Olivia Pristine? She murdered your mother and sisters.
Robin turned ashen. Yang Yovel tried to protest.
The outer satellites don't have pyre, Yovel. Sheffield revealed that. Would you use it on them anyway? Will you turn my name into common anathema, like lynch and boycott?
Boyle turned to Gisbella.
Will your idealism take you back to Zufa Martel to serve out your sentence? And you, Dagenham, will you give her up? Let her go?
He listened to the outcries and watched the confusion for a moment, bitter and constrained.
Life is so simple, he said. This decision is so simple, isn't it? Am I to respect Prestine's property rights, the welfare of the planets, Gisbella's ideals, Dagenham's realism, Robin's conscience? Press the button and watch the robot jump. But I'm not a robot. I'm a freak of the universe, a thinking animal, and I'm trying to see my way clear through this morass. Am I to turn pyre over to the world and let it destroy itself? Am I to teach the world how to space jaunt and let us spread our freak show from galaxy to galaxy through all the universe? What's the answer?
The bartender robot hurled its mixing glass across the room with a resounding crash. In the amazed silence that followed, Dagenham grunted,
Damn, my radiation's disrupted your dolls again, Pristine.
The answer is yes,
the robot said, quite distinctly.
What? Foyle asked, taken aback.
The answer to your question is yes.
Thank you, Foyle said.
My pleasure, sir, the robot responded. A man is a member of society first, and an individual second. You must go along with society, whether it chooses destruction or not.
Completely haywire,
Dagenham said impatiently. Switch it off, Pristine.
Wait,
Foyle commanded. He looked at the beaming grin engraved in the steel robot face.
But society can be so stupid,
so confused.
You've witnessed this conference.
Yes, sir. But you must teach, not dictate. You must teach society.
To space jaunt? Why?
Why reach out to the stars and galaxies? What for? Because you're alive, sir. You might as well ask, why is life? Don't ask about it. Live it.
Quite mad, Dagenham muttered.
But fascinating, Yang Yovel murmured.
There's got to be more to life than just living, Foyle said to the robot.
Then find it for yourself, sir. Don't ask the world to stop moving because you have doubts.
Why can't we all move forward together?
Because you're all different. You're not lemmings. Some must lead and hope that the rest will follow.
Who leads?
The men who must. Driven men. Compelled men.
Freak men.
You're all freaks, sir. But you always have been freaks. Life is a freak. That's its hope and glory.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure, sir.
You've saved the day.
Always a lovely day somewhere, sir.
The robot beamed.
Then it fizzed, jangled, and collapsed. Foyle turned on the others.
That thing's right, he said.
And you're wrong.
Who are we, any of us, to make a decision for the world? Let the world make its own decisions. Who are we to keep secrets from the world? Let the world know and decide for itself. Come to old St. Pat's.
He jaunted. They followed. The square block was still cordoned, and by now an enormous crowd had gathered. So many of the rash and curious were jaunting into the smoking ruins that the police had set up a protective induction field to keep them out. Even so, urchins, curio-seekers, and irresponsibles attempted to jaunt into the wreckage, only to be burned by the induction field and depart squawking. At a signal from Yang Yovel, the field was turned off. Foyle went through the hot rubble to the east wall of the cathedral, which stood to a height of 15 feet. He felt the smoking stones,
pressed and levered. There came a grinding grumble, and a 3-by-5-foot section jarred open and then stuck. Foyle gripped it and pulled. The section trembled. Then the roasted hinges collapsed and the stone panel crumbled. 2 centuries before, when organized religion had been abolished and orthodox worshippers of all faiths had been driven underground, some devout souls had constructed this secret niche in Old St. Pat's and turned it into an altar. The gold of the crucifix still shone with the brilliance of eternal faith. At the foot of the cross rested a small black box of inert lead isotope.
"Is this a sign?"
Foyle panted.
"Is this the answer I want?"
He snatched the heavy safe before any could seize it. He jaunted 100 yards to the remnants of the cathedral steps facing Fifth Avenue. There he opened the safe in full view of the gaping crowds. A shout of consternation went up from the intelligence crews who knew the truth of its contents.
"Foyle!"
Dagenham cried.
"For God's sake, Foyle!"
Yang Yovel shouted. Foyle withdrew a slug of pyre, the color of iodine crystals, the size of a cigarette. 1 pound of transplutonian isotopes in solid solution.
"Pyre!"
he roared to the mob.
"Take it! Keep it! It's your future! Pyre!"
He hurled the slug into the crowd and roared over his shoulder,
"San Fran! Russian Hill stage!"
He jaunted St. Louis, Denver to San Francisco, arriving at the Russian Hill stage where it was 4 in the afternoon and the streets were bustling with late shopper jaunters.
"Pyre!"
Foyle bellowed. His devil face glowed blood red. He was an appalling sight.
"Pyre! It's danger! It's death! It's yours! Make them tell you what it is!"
"Gnome!"
he called to his pursuit as it arrived and jaunted. It was lunch hour in Nome, and the lumberjacks jaunting down from the sawmills for their beefsteak and beer were startled by the tiger-faced man who hurled a 1-pound slug of iodine-colored alloy into their midst and shouted in the gutter tongue,
"Pyre! You hear me, man? You listen to me, you? Pyre is filthy death for us, all of us. Grab no guesses, you. Make 'em tell you about pyre is all."
To Dagenham, Yang Yovel, and others jaunting in after him, as always, seconds too late, he shouted,
"Tokyo! Imperial stage!"
He disappeared a split second before their shots reached him. It was 9 o'clock of a crisp, whiny morning in Tokyo, and the morning rush hour crowd milling around the Imperial stage alongside the carp ponds was paralyzed by a tiger-faced samurai who appeared and hurled a slug of curious metal and unforgettable warnings and admonitions at them. Foyle continued to Bangkok, where it was pouring rain, and Delhi, where a monsoon raged, always pursued in his mad dog course. In Baghdad, it was 3 in the morning, and the nightclub crowd and pub crawlers who stayed a perpetual half hour ahead of closing time around the world cheered him alcoholically. In Paris and again in London, it was midnight, and the mobs on the Champs-Élysées and in Piccadilly Circus were galvanized by Foyle's appearance and passionate exhortation. Having led his pursuers 3/4 of the way around the world in 50 minutes, Foyle permitted them to overtake him in London. He permitted them to knock him down, take the ILI safe from his arms, count the remaining slugs of pyre, and slam the safe shut.
"There's enough left for a war. Plenty left for destruction, annihilation, if you dare."
He was laughing and sobbing in hysterical triumph.
"Millions for defense, but not 1 cent for survival."
"Do you realize what you've done, you damned killer?"
Dagenham shouted.
"I know what I've done."
9 pounds of pyre scattered around the world? One thought and we'll... How can we get it back without telling them the truth? For God's sake, yo, keep that crowd back. Don't let them hear this."
"Impossible."
"Then let's jaunt."
"No,"
Foyle roared.
"Let them hear this. Let them hear everything."
"You're insane, man. You've handed a loaded gun to children."
"Stop treating them like children and they'll stop behaving like children. Who the hell are you to play monitor?"
"What are you talking about?"
"Stop treating them like children. Explain the loaded gun to them.
Bring it all out into the open."
Foyle laughed savagely.
"I've ended the last Star Chamber conference in the world. I've blown the last secret wide open. No more secrets from now on.
No more telling the children what's best for them to know. Let them all grow up. It's about time.
Christ, he is insane.
Am I? I've handed life and death back to the people who do the living and dying. The common man's been whipped and led along enough by driven men like us. Compulsive men. Tiger men who can't help lashing the world before them. We're all tigers, the three of us. But who the hell are we to make decisions for the world just because we're compulsive? Let the world make its own choice between life and death. Why should we be saddled with the responsibility?
We're not saddled, Yang Yovel said quietly. We're driven. We're forced to seize the responsibility that the average man shirks.
Then let him stop shirking it. Let him stop tossing his duty and guilt onto the shoulders of the first freak who comes along grabbing at it. Are we to be scapegoats for the world forever?
Damn you,
Dagenham raged.
Don't you realize that you can't trust people? They don't know enough for their own good.
Then let them learn or die. We're all in this together. Let's live together or die together.
Do you want to die in their ignorance? You've got to figure out how we can get those slugs back without blowing everything wide open.
No.
I believe in them. I was one of them before I turned tiger. They can all turn uncommon if they're kicked awake like I was.
Foyle shook himself and abruptly jaunted to the bronze head of Eros, 50 feet above the counter of Piccadilly Circus. He perched precariously and bawled,
Listen to me, all you. Listen, man. Gonna sermonize me? Dig this, you.
He was answered with a roar.
You pigs, you. You goof like pigs is all. You got the most in you and you use the least. You hear me, you? Got a million in you and spend pennies. Got a genius in you and think crazies. Got a heart in you and feel empties. All of you, every you.
He was jeered. He continued with the hysterical passion of the possessed.
Take a war to make you spend. Take a jam to make you think. Take a challenge to make you great. Rest of the time you sit around lazy, you. Pigs, you. All right, God damn you, I challenge you, me. Die or live and be great. Blow yourselves to Christ gone, or come and find me, Gully Foyle, and I make you men. I make you great. I give you the stars.
He disappeared. He jaunted up the geodesic lines of space-time to an elsewhere and an elsewhen. He arrived in chaos. He hung in a precarious para now for a moment, and then tumbled back into chaos.
It can be done, he thought. It must be done.
He jaunted again, a burning spear flung from unknown into unknown, and again he tumbled back into a chaos of paraspace and paratime. He was lost in nowhere.
I believe, he thought. I have faith.
He jaunted again and failed again.
Faith in what?
He asked himself, adrift in limbo.
Faith in faith. He answered himself. It isn't necessary to have something to believe in. It's only necessary to believe that somewhere there's something worthy of belief.
He jaunted for the last time, and the power of his willingness to believe transformed the para now of his random destination into a real now. Rigel in Orion, burning blue-white, 540 light-years from Earth, 10,000 times more luminous than the sun, a cauldron of energy circled by 37 massive planets. Foyle hung, freezing and suffocating in space, face to face with the incredible destiny in which he believed, but which was still inconceivable. He hung in space for a blinding moment, as helpless, as amazed, and yet as inevitable as the first gilled creature to come out of the sea and hang gulping on a primeval beach in the dawn history of life on Earth. He space-jaunted, turning para now into now. Vega in Lyra, an AO star, 26 light-years from Earth, burning bluer than Rigel, planetless, but encircled by swarms of blazing comets whose gaseous tails scintillated across the blue-black firmament. And again he turned now, Canopus, yellow as the sun, gigantic, thunderous in the silent wastes of space, at last invaded by a creature that once was Guild. The creature hung, gulping on the beach of the universe, nearer death than life, nearer the future than the past, 10 leagues beyond the wide world's end. It wondered at the masses of dust, meteors, and motes that girdled Canopus in a broad, flat ring, like the rings of Saturn and of the breadth of Saturn's orbit. Now, Aldebaran and Taurus, a monstrous red star of a pair of stars whose 16 planets wove high-velocity ellipses around their gyrating parents. He was hurling himself through space-time with growing assurance. Now, Antares, an M1 red giant, paired like Aldebaran, 250 light-years from Earth, encircled by 250 planetoids of the size of Mercury, of the climate of Eden. And lastly, now. He was drawn to the womb of his birth. He returned to the Nomad, now welded into the mass of the Sargasso asteroid, home of the lost scientific people who scavenged the spaceways between Mars and Jupiter, home of Joseph, who had tattooed Foyle's tiger face and mated him to the girl Moira. He was back aboard Nomad.
Gully Foyle is my name, and Terra is my nation. Deep space is my dwelling place. The stars, my destination.
The girl, Moira, found him in his tool locker aboard a Nomad, curled in a tight fetal ball, his face hollow, his eyes burning with a divine revelation. Although the asteroid had long since been repaired and made airtight, Foyle still went through the motions of the perilous existence that had given birth to him years before. But now he slept and meditated, digesting and encompassing the magnificence he had learned. He awoke from reverie to trance and drifted out of the locker, passing Moira with blind eyes, brushing past the awed girl who stepped aside and sank to her knees. He wandered through the empty passages and returned to the womb of the locker. He curled up again and was lost. She touched him once. He made no move. She spoke the name that had been emblazoned on his face. He made no answer. She turned and fled to the interior of the asteroid, to the Holy of Holies in which Joseph reigned.
My husband has returned to us,
Moira said.
Your husband?
The God-man who almost destroyed us.
Joseph's face darkened with anger.
Where is he? Show me.
You will not hurt him.
War debts must be paid. Show me.
Joseph followed her to the locker aboard Nomad and gazed intently at Foyle. The anger in his face was replaced by wonder. He touched Foyle and spoke to him. There was still no response.
You cannot punish him, Moira said. He is dying.
No,
Joseph answered quietly.
He is dreaming. I, a priest, know these dreams. Presently he will awaken and read to us, his people, his thoughts.
And then you will punish him.
He has found it already in himself, Joseph said.
He settled down outside the locker. The girl, Moira, ran up the twisted corridors and returned a few moments later with a silver basin of warm water and a silver tray of food. She bathed Foyle gently and then set the tray before him as an offering. Then she settled down alongside Joseph, alongside the world, prepared to await the awakening. End of The Stars by Destination by Alfred Bester. Narrated by Roy Avers in the studios of the American Printing House for the Blind, Louisville, Kentucky. For the Library of Congress, April 1983. For special distribution as authorized by Act of Congress under Public Law 89-522, with the permission of the copyright holder and the publisher, Berkeley Publishing Corporation, 200 Madison Avenue, New York, New York, 10016. If you experienced any difficulty with this recording, please tie a piece of string around one of the container straps or latches before returning it.
placed the defective recording in the container, braille side down, for identification.